Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Surprising turn of events today in the sexual assault case of actor-comedian Bill Cosby. He was released from a Pennsylvania state prison after the state Supreme Court overturned his 2018 conviction on a legal technicality. The man, once known as America's Dad, had been accused by dozens of women of drugging and sexually assaulting them over the course of his decades-long career. But what's behind today's legal developments, and what does it mean for shocked sexual assault victims who have watched this case so closely? Well, we're looking at all of the angles tonight. My guests are trial attorney Bobby Henry and Indira Hinard, executive director of the DC Rape Crisis Center. I also want to hear from you tonight. What do you think about the release of Bill Cosby from prison? 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Bobby, Indira, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Bobby, can you hear me?
Yes. Hello. Good evening, Harold. How are you this evening?
I'm doing just fine. So, Bobby, let's talk about the legal ramifications of this, first of all. I need to have you kind of break this down for those of us who did not go to law school. What happened today at the Pennsylvania Supreme Court that allowed Cosby to be released?
Well, in essence, it is a question of fundamental fairness. Fundamental fairness undergirds our entire legal system. And what we have to understand is, as with everything in our society, there are rules, and you have to play by the rules. The rules are is actually the Constitution. And all of us as American citizens are protected by the Constitution for a number of things, but more specifically in the Cosby case, we're protected against giving, or he was protected against giving testimony that would incriminate him. In other words, you can't be forced to testify against yourself. So what happens here is you had a district attorney, Castor was his name, in Pennsylvania, who in fact, after a lengthy investigation of the charges, decided that there was not enough credible evidence at that time in 2004 to bring charges against Mr. Cosby. So as a result, they tried sort of another angle to bring justice or to meet some type of justice out for the, quote, alleged victim. So what they did was they said, we're not going to prosecute you. Now, when they said they were not going to prosecute him, that had effect on the civil case that the alleged victim would bring. Now, under a civil case, you cannot likewise be required to give incriminating statements against yourself. So basically, you take what's known as the Fifth Amendment. Mm-hmm. So once that DA said, I'm not going to prosecute you, then that takes away Mr. Cosby's right to invoke the Fifth Amendment, and he's now required in the civil trial to answer the questions. So in other words, when they say, we're not going to prosecute you, now you're giving testimony in the civil case, and that testimony could not be used against you. And for 10 years, from 2005 until 2015, that decision held. But when a new district attorney came into office, she decided to reopen the case. She opened it, and then her successor decided to charge Mr. Cosby. And that's a breach of fundamental fairness.
So let me make sure I understand this. The Cosby made a deal with Bruce Castor, the original prosecutor, who, and they agreed, Castor agreed not to prosecute Cosby. When a new prosecutor came in, she decided to reopen the case. So my question is, and certainly I'm not a lawyer, but is it safe to assume that that new prosecutor was bound by the previous deal that was made in that same prosecutorial office?
Congratulations. We're going to give you a JD degree because you got it. You've nailed it on the head.
Okay.
The prior district attorney bound his successors to his agreement.
I see. And so the court said today that his due process was violated. So they did not say that he was not guilty of sexual assault that he was convicted of, but they said that the process was unfair, and as a result, he needed to be released.
Well, we have to be careful, Harold, how we say that they said he was not guilty. We have to understand that our criminal justice system and our society, what it says is that anyone, I don't care if you're the President of the United States or you are the lowest person in America, you are presumed innocent until you are found guilty. Mr. Cosby has not been found guilty. So I can't say that someone's saying, oh, you're not guilty. So are we presuming people to be guilty these days before being convicted of a jury of their peers and or a judge under the rule of law?
But let's back up for a minute, because he entered into a plea deal back in 2018 in relation to the sexual assault accusation by Andrea Constand.
He was convicted.
Okay. So before I bring Indira in here, because I want to make sure that I understand the legal process. If you are, he was convicted, but the conviction was overturned based on the violation of due process, not based on the accusation. But you're saying that no matter what, the overturning of this conviction, it doesn't matter. You're saying it doesn't matter why it was overturned. It is overturned, technicality or not.
Yes. You see, our Constitution is not a technicality. And I don't want those who disagree with this decision to, go across the country saying that, oh, he got off on a technicality. Our Constitution isn't a technicality. You have to abide by the Constitution. Because if you look at it this way, Harold, without that illegal or that forbidden fruit of the testimony that he offered, you would not have gotten a conviction. Because Cosby didn't testify against himself. Mr. Cosby didn't testify against himself.
A lot to digest here. Indira, your reaction to the release of Bill Cosby today?
Yeah, thanks so much, Harold, and thank you so much for having us on. The decision by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court was a travesty, and it was an injustice. And this is a deeply painful moment for not just the survivors in the Cosby case, who came forward with great courage against a powerful man and with great personal risk, but for all survivors. It takes courage to come forward and stand in your truth. And so we are holding space for survivors. We want them to know that we believe you, we support you, we are standing with you. And I think it's important to make note that Bill Cosby in general, this wasn't just 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. 60 women came forward saying that they were sexually assaulted by this man. And so what this decision reminds me of is the flawed criminal justice system, and it continues to remind us why we need to reimagine how we help survivors of sexual assault find safety, healing, and justice.
When you say reimagine that, what do you mean?
Well, what I mean by that is that justice and accountability is going to look different for each survivor. And so we have to begin to look at it through a very widened lens, because survivors don't normally get the justice that they seek through the traditional paradigms of the criminal justice system.
I want to go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the release of actor-comedian Bill Cosby. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court decided today in releasing a decision saying that his due process was violated in reference to his sexual assault conviction back in 2018. What do you think about the release of Bill Cosby? I want to hear your opinions. Let's go to Tony. Tony calling from Bowie. Tony, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thanks for having me. And the brother that you have on, I guess he's a legal analyst or
he's
a lawyer,
an attorney. He's a noted attorney in the state of Maryland. But please go right ahead, Tony.
Okay. Well, thank you, because he hit the nail right on the head. And I sympathize with a victim of rape. But the woman you just had on, she said 60 women. When would this man have time for 60 women in such a short period of time? Another point that I wanted to hit on, if this happens too often in the black community where we do not have financial resources to fight these prosecutors and get our convictions overturned. I have been convicted of something I didn't commit. I didn't have the financial means to fight my case like I wanted to.
Yeah, I think we lost Tony. I will say that you said short period of time. Just to be clear, the women who accused Bill Cosby of sexual assault accused him. They claim that these sexual assaults really began back in the 60s during the lion's share of his professional career. So I'm not sure, he may not have been familiar with how far back these accusations go. But the earliest accusations, the earliest claims by the women who have made these accusations of sexual assault went back through the 60s and continued all the way up through the early 2000s. So that is quite a long time. Bobby, you were about to say something?
Yes, I was about to say, nobody should be victimized in a sexual fashion or any other fashion for that matter. But let's be clear. When we say 60 women, there were not 60 women on trial there were not 60 claims brought against Mr. Cosby in 2004 when the initial district attorney was evaluating these cases. There was just one. There was just one. And all I simply say is over those many, many decades where there was this alleged sexual assaults that were going on, why wasn't it brought forward? Why didn't you have to exercise your rights? You can't sit on your rights and then blame someone else and say, oh, Mr. Prosecutor, you got it wrong. Mr. Supreme Court, you got it wrong. No, you have to move forward and take action on your particular rights. Now, you have to understand that in this particular case, this victim, she was involved in over a two-year relationship with Mr. Cosby. When she got into, and when the district attorney said he could not go forward with the case, they went forward with the civil trial, she accepted $3.38 million. She had 3.3 million reasons. But yet and still, and she said it was supposed to be a confidential settlement. But yet and still, 10 years later, she wants to go forward and she wants to say, I am the victim. Victims don't take payment. victims seek what they believe to be justice. Now, if you exchange what you believe to be justice for your $3.3 million, then how can you be heard to complain?
Bobby, let me stop you right there because I've got to take a break. But when we come back in, Indira, I'll let you respond. I'm sure you have a lot to say about sexual assault victims coming forward and the like. So please stay with us. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the Bill Cosby case released today from a Pennsylvania state prison. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're taking a look at what's behind the release of Bill Cosby from a Pennsylvania state prison today and what it may mean for the prosecution of sexual assault suspects. A lot to digest here. My guests are trial attorney Bobby Henry and Indira Hennard, executive director of the DC Rape Crisis Center. Give us a call if you have an opinion about this case at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You're certainly welcome to tweet me at hfisher, W-H-U-R, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Before the break, I promised Indira that she could respond to what attorney Bobby Henry was saying. Please go right ahead.
Yes, thank you, Harold. So I definitely want to directly respond. And so let me be clear in the clearest terms possible. It does not matter if there weren't 60 cases against Bill Cosby. There were, and even though there was one case, what happens is that when a survivor can bear witness to someone else telling their story, there's power in that. So what we saw is that the women who came forward, there were more women who came and spoke up around their trauma. And the reason that women don't come forward or their struggle to come forward is because they don't want to be re-victimized in the criminal justice system. They don't want to be victim blamed. They don't want to be shamed. Exactly what the attorney said is the reason why victims don't come forward, right? Because sexual assault is put on trial again, and the burden of proof tends to be on the survivor, and it shouldn't be on the survivor. We have to be very, very clear that if a survivor chooses not to come forward, that is their choice and that is their prerogative, and it does not negate the fact that their sexual trauma did not happen. When we think about the emotional and psychological impact of being sexually violated, to go through that criminal justice process, some survivors may not choose that. And so whatever their choice in terms of how they move forward, that's completely up to them, because what we're talking about is survivor-defined justice. And that may not necessarily be in a courtroom, but that does not mean that they were not sexually assaulted. And the fact that we are putting them on trial and putting the burden of proof on them speaks to a larger issue of what we need to do as a society in terms of really having a reckoning around what survivors are believed and what survivors aren't believed.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Sheila, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Sheila. What's on your mind?
Well, yes. I just think that it's crap when women goes up into the men's hotel room thinking that they're
Sheila, you're going to have to come closer to the phone. You're too far away.
The problem is a lot of these women go into these men's rooms late at night thinking that they're going to get ahead. So then they get sex. And they want to call them rape because they're thinking that the more sex they give, the more ahead they got a chance of getting ahead. I think what's wrong with that lady got paid and then all of a sudden you're going to call that rape? No, you don't do that to him. And I think it'll allow them just to get you to break a black man down. And I'm a woman, and I have two daughters. I would tell my daughter the same. When you stay out the men's room, you know what they want at nighttime, and they marry. They go home and get that from their wife. They don't need you. We need to stop this mess.
Sheila, thank you so much for your comments. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Kim, calling from D.C., thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is that I do agree that victims sometimes do not want to come forward. And I've been a victim myself. But it's so sad that we come forward so late. They're trying to build their careers. They should have never gone to this man's home, been in a hotel, and I'm 65 years old. So in the old days, all kinds of microdots and different type of pills people were taking. But you have to know what to do and what not to do. And yes, he was wrong. If he did it, but you shouldn't have gone to his house.
Kim, thank you so much. I would like to ask, and this is not, I don't know if this is a legal question or not, but we've now had two callers talk about you shouldn't have gone to his room or to his house or what have you. But the accusation, not only by Andrea Constand, but by 60 of
you're
these.
You're absolutely right. It was a pattern that he did.
I beg your pardon?
You're right. It was a pattern.
No, that's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm asking is that the women who have accused him, this isn't now about the criminal case so much as it is about the comments that both Kim and Sheila have made, is that if what these 60 women said is true, they did not have an opportunity to say no once they arrived, if indeed they were drugged and incapacitated.
But why did they go?
Well, that's, you know, that's not the question that I'm asking. My question, and I'll ask Indira about this. You can at any point say no to any advances that a man gives, and you have every right to do that, no matter how close you are. Is that am I on point here, Indira?
So if you are incapacitated,
not if you're incapacitated. I'm saying if you're not, and you go somewhere with somebody, and you change your mind. You have every right to change your mind at any point.
Correct.
Now go right ahead about the issue regarding being incapacitated.
Right. So you can change your mind at any point. But if you are incapacitated, if you have been taking drugs or been given something, then you cannot consent. And I think it's important that we cannot be victim blaming. It doesn't matter why somebody went to somebody's house or room or what they had on or any of that. They are still a victim of sexual assault. And this is the very reason why survivors don't come forward for the comments that we just heard, as well as the comments by the lawyer, right? Because then the burden of proof gets on the survivor. Well, why did you do this and why did you do this? It doesn't matter.
Well, Harold, I think what we need to bring forward, and I certainly appreciate Indira's position, while I do not agree with them, I'm not victim blaming. This case being overturned by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court is not about victim blaming. This is about fundamental fairness. This is about applying the Constitution of the United States. And we all need to be careful about using the Constitution as a buffet table, taking bits and pieces and leaving the rest of it there. The fact of the matter is that the district attorney said that, Mr. Cosby, we are not going to prosecute you. And then he turns to the alleged victim and tells the victim, that's the best I can do. the victim then goes on with her civil suit. And under that pretense, Mr. Cosby had to say everything that went on. Now, people are constantly saying that folks were drugged and they were thinking that they were out. Please read Ms. Constand's testimony. Her testimony is that she was alone with him on many occasions over 2 years, and he did make an advance at her, and she rebuffed his advance. He didn't drug her. I mean, he didn't throw her down. He didn't take physical advantage of her. She left. She came back. She alleges that she was given some pills at some point, which she put in her mouth. She did that. But as it relates to a conviction, and this is what I think we have to understand. We can't just simply say that no matter what a person does, if you put yourself in a situation that leads to an unfavorable outcome, it's not your fault. But what happens is when you sit in that box in front of 12 members of your community and they hear all the facts, what do you think they're going to believe?
That is a very, very complex question.
Absolutely.
And which is why we have juries, because we could have Sheila in a jury box with Kim in a jury box, but we could also have an Indira in the jury box as well. And that makes it a bit of a conundrum. But but Kim, thank you so much for your comment. Before I go back to the phone lines, I do want to ask you, Bobby, about this non-prosecution agreement as it related to the civil case 10 years before. How common is something like that?
It's very common. It's very common because what happens is we all know that if you're advancing a civil case, the person who is under suspicion of the wrongdoing will simply take the Fifth Amendment. In our community, we always talked about, I take the Fifth. You're growing up as a kid, I always wanted to be a lawyer, so I'd say I take the Fifth. But what we have to understand is that Fifth Amendment is no good in a civil case once the prosecutor says, I'm not going to prosecute you for taking the cookie out of the jar. Now, you have to go in there and you have to tell everything that happened, honestly, under oath in the civil case. You can't say I take the Fifth, because if you are not honest, you can be charged with perjury. So what happens is, if Mr. Cosby's case, he relied to his detriment on his constitutional right not to incriminate himself. And he gave that testimony. And what happened was they took the very testimony that he gave. Now, let's turn over the coin for 1 second. Turn the coin over. If the prosecutor who followed Mr. Castor, who was the original agreeing prosecutor, if they had said, you know what, we believe we have additional information to go forward against Mr. Cosby, we will not use any of his depositions. We will not bring in any witnesses that are not legitimate witnesses. And what I mean by that, you have to watch the pattern, bringing in witnesses that talk about prior bad acts that are not admissible. You see, because you have this thing about admissibility. So if you don't bring those people in and you go separately in another direction, and you proceed to prosecute, then you may have a chance. Mm-hmm. You may have a chance of getting your case in court. I'm not saying you're going to win, but you cannot take the statements given under the guise of we're not going to prosecute you, and now that I got your statements, I'm going to prosecute you.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Danny, calling from Maryland. Danny, thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
I read when the trial was done and over with, I read part of the 88-page report that was given in all of the statements. And I do remember that it was said that this woman was a tennis pro and that he had been, they had been seeing each other, like Bobby said, they had been seeing each other off and on. And it did say that he did say that he gave her some pills, but because she was on cocaine and she wanted to calm down, so he gave her something to bring it down. He didn't go give her anything intentionally to do anything to her. He stated that this was what he did and that he thought it would help. So my question is this. Why would you wait 10 years after the fact? You got all of this money from this man. You wait 10 years after the fact to say something again. And then these prosecutors, the prosecutor that came back, they knew that they were wrong. They knew that they weren't supposed to go back and retry that man. That was uncalled for, and they knew they were wrong. And I think it was all a setup. It was plain and simple. I think it was all a setup. I'm not taking nothing from those out there that have had things happen to them, because I've had things happen to me. Did I choose not to tell? Yes, I chose not to say anything. You know, but that was what I did. I'm fine. I'm going on with my life as usual. I'm about to get married next year, so I'm fine. My kids are fine.
Let me see, first of all, if Indira can address the first part of your question, and then I do want to go back to the legal piece that you also raised. Indira, she was talking about the waiting and the suspicion that was raised with the settlement that Andrea Constan received versus then coming forward about the allegation of sexual assault.
Yeah, so I think, you know, kind of first I just, the reason why it takes, that it can take longer for survivors of sexual assault to come forward is because we have to think about the neurobiology of trauma, and we have to think about the ways in which trauma is stored and recalled in the brain. Our body holds trauma, right? So it may take longer for survivors to come forward, and that's okay. That doesn't mean, again, that it did not happen, right? Because we have to remember, it takes a lot of courage for someone to come forward and tell you their story. Nobody owes you their story. And so the other reason why it takes a while goes back to my earlier point, is because survivors of sexual violence, they don't want to be re-victimized. They don't want to be or feel like they're being victim blamed, right? And those are some of the other factors that go into survivors coming forward at a later date.
Bobby, here's my other question, and this has to do with what Danny just brought up. The Supreme Court essentially said, based on the previous agreement with Bruce Castor, there was not, this case should have never come to criminal trial. And Danny makes a really good point. Didn't the prosecutor in the 2018 trial know that? Didn't the prosecutor know and understand that she was bound by the agreement that was made by Castor 10 years before?
Yes. Well, here, let me make sure I said it straight. When you say she, that was the prosecutor that reopened the case.
Exactly. That's exactly what I mean.
And then she went out of office, and another prosecutor came in, and he charged Mr. Cosby.
So, I mean, it could have been 2 prosecutors, 10 prosecutors.
Right.
They were all bound by that original agreement.
They were absolutely bound.
So why did they bring the case to court?
Therein lies the problem, and that's what the Supreme Court said. Because, you know, the Supreme Court didn't get to the myriad of other questions on the appeal. When they got to that one, that was the first issue, in essence. They said, this case should have never been brought. Is that it doesn't matter who the criminal, who the defendant was. The fact of the matter is that your constitutional right against self-incrimination trumps everything. You don't get to bring a case against someone where you have told them that you're not going to prosecute them. Then you take the very... See, I think that is what so inflamed the Supreme Court, that they took the very statements that Mr. Cosby gave under the impression that he would not be prosecuted and prosecuted him with those statements.
So again, as I said in the beginning, this was not about the crime.
No.
This was about the agreement.
That's correct. Okay. That's correct. And that's the thing I want Indira to leave with this evening. This Supreme Court case should not be taken in a way so as to chill the ability or the willingness of victims to come forward and to talk to law enforcement and to proceed with criminal actions taken against those who have violated them. What this case says is that our Constitution stands for everybody. Everybody. I dare say there's no one listening to this or no one in our community that does not know what my rights are. We teach our young people that you have rights against, you know, you have rights, that they have to read you your Miranda rights. The first thing they say is, I've not been read my rights. The reason I say that is because that's your fourth constitutional right. And they have to know that they have rights in these cases, but you have to move on them.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. William calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, William. What's on your mind? William, start all over again. You were a little garbled. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Yeah, go right ahead, please.
Why does it take so long for these women to pick up these rape cases against them?
William, I can't quite understand you. I'm going to give you a chance to repeat your question again. You may have to call us back. Try again.
I'm saying, are you listening?
I am. Go ahead.
Why does it take so long for these women to bring up these cases against men that they couldn't repeat? And the second thing, why would a full-grown woman agree to enter a room, supposed to make it?
Okay, I didn't hear the second part of the question, but again, that's another, now I sound like I'm in court. That question was asked and answered, but I will let Indira give you the information again, because that's something that I think that you deserve to know. Again, Indira, it's the question of why did it take the women not, and I'm assuming, because I didn't quite get all of what he said, whether he was talking about Andrea Constand or the 60 other women who came forward and said that they were assaulted. Why did it take so long? And speak specifically to this case, not more generally, because we're not talking about some unknown individual. We are talking about at the time probably one of the most powerful Black entertainers in history.
Right, and so I think, you know, it's important to understand what that power meant. And what I can only imagine, I can't speak for those survivors, for the Cosby survivors, in terms of why it took them so long. But what we know to be true about sexual violence is that it is rooted in power and control. And so when I said my earlier statements, that still holds true around the power piece and understanding what it means to not wanting to be re-victimized, the fear around coming forward, the victim blaming, wondering if people are going to believe you, you know, all of those things still hold true. And then thinking about the Cosby survivors, thinking about who he was at the time and what that power meant, I can only imagine also had something to do with it as well. But again, it does not matter whether it happened one day ago or 45 years ago or whatever the case is, they were still sexually assaulted. And so the time frame in terms of when you come forward does not negate the trauma that happened. And so I think we have to get really, really clear about what it means when your body endures a trauma such as a sexual assault and what that does to the brain, and thinking about the dynamics in terms of power and control of sexual violence.
Let's go to Dee calling from Virginia. Dee, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I just want to say, I've always said that I think we live in the best country in the world because our rights are unalienable and they are vast. And I think that we have the best legal system that I've ever come across. So having said that, I don't know if it's really something that we should be discussing as far as like, well, this is a slap in the face for sexual assault victims or anything, because the fact of the matter is, when you just look at the legalities of it, he was not given due process. And because of that, and he served years for that, because he found that he was not given due process, he was released. So it is true that you have the right to not self-incriminate. And if they then turn around and use the words that they said they weren't, then that's just how it's going to roll. And it's unfortunate because there were a lot of women that said that he did these awful things to him, and he may be a scumbag and guilty of it, but unfortunately we have to follow the rules. And I don't think it's unfortunate. It's fortunate that we have to follow the rules of the law. And if we don't follow the rules of the law, this is what happens.
Okay. Dee, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate your comment. Does double jeopardy apply in this case, Bobby? Is this it as it relates to the 2018 conviction?
Well, very technically, the prosecutors or the prosecution's office can appeal. They can ask for a review of the Supreme Court's ruling, or they could ask for re-argument. But I dare say that is the longest of long shots to bring that back again, because the decision was some 79 pages long. And it was a well-reasoned opinion, although it was a split court. It was 4-3, four people voting, four justices saying that it should be overturned. And there were three justices that said that, no, it shouldn't be overturned. But that's the way our society goes. And so, yes, short of appealing to the Supreme Court, that's it. It's over. Oh, I do want to make this point.
Sure.
That there is a statute of limitations to bringing these cases. And I do understand Indira's point when she says about what assault does to the body and when you're victimized. And I understand that. And that's something that you have to take up with your legislatures. But there is a 12-year statute of limitations on those types of crimes. The reason there's a statute of limitations on those types of crimes is because you also have a Sixth Amendment right. And that Sixth Amendment right is to have a speedy trial. So if you get beyond the statute of limitations, how can that person who's being accused of these things put forth the best defense that they can? And just like the caller said, our criminal justice system is the best in the free world. And unfortunately, we have to mete out justice fairly on both sides of the coin. We have to give any alleged victims their day in court within a reasonable time, and we also have to give the defendant a reasonable time so that they can put on their defense.
Well, let me make sure that Indira has some reasonable time to make a final comment. Indira, I'll let you have the last word. You have about 30 seconds.
Thank you, Harold. I, simply just want to say to any survivor of sexual assault who's out there listening, please know that you aren't alone. If you are needing support tonight and beyond, feel free to call our 24/7 hotline at 202-333-RAPE. That's 202-333-RAPE. And just know that no matter however you feel to move forward on your healing journey, know that we believe you, and sexual assault advocates across the country are and will continue to fight for you.
What's that number? One more time, please, Indira.
202-333-RAPE.
333-RAPE. Indira Hennard, Bobby Henry, thank you both for talking to us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, June 30th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.